Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting from the 2019 Ohio State Fair today. It's a beautiful day at the State Fair. For more information about WOSU Kids Day, go to WOSU.org. Just to let you know, you can meet Munch the Fox at WOSU Kids Day today. You can join Munch the Fox starting at 11 o'clock. Columbus Recreation and Parks will serve a free lunch at the Cardinal Shelter. Visitors can find Munch the Fox at Central Park prior to the lunch service and walk to lunch service in the Cardinal Shelter. For more information, check out the WOSU Kids Day webpage. There are people waiting in line with their kids to see the, some big celebrities, PBS Kids costume characters, Clifford the Dog, Daniel Tiger, Nature Cat, and more. So check that out at WOSU.org. The Netflix hit series Stranger Things, like many scary stories, is set in a fictional small town. In this case, Hawkins, Indiana, is home to a passel of preteens who discover, along with a few adults, the existence of an interdimensional monster. Throughout the three seasons, the isolation of Hawkins plays its own role in the story. The contrivance is familiar. Many films and stories, just like about every story Stephen King ever wrote, similarly tap the small-town vibe. So what makes a nostalgic middle America small town such a great setting for horror? That's what we're talking about today. If you have a favorite horror story or horror story or horror movie or film or series that you think illustrates this, give us a call. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Dave Phillippe is the Director of Film and Video at the Wexner Center for the Arts at Ohio State University. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Tim Wagoner is a horror author and creative writing professor at Sinclair Community College in Dayton. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Tim, when you structure a horror story, how does the setting play a role?
Well, I grew up in a small town, so an awful lot of my stories and novels take place there. I think that for a lot of people, small town represents like normality. And horror comes from like a violation of that. And so it's a perfect setting for it. I think in film, a lot of it's practical. If you don't have a very big budget, it's a lot easier to shoot, you know, maybe in your own hometown or in a place like that. But horror also comes from a certain amount of intimacy and like a claustrophobic kind of place. And you get that in a small town more, I think, than you probably get in a city. I mean, you're very, very crowded in a city, but there's lots of other people there, lots of people to turn to for help. No, not so much in a small town.
Yeah, Dave Phillippe, you're nodding. I mean, so when it comes to a budget, a film budget, yeah, it helps. You know, when they did Children of the Corn, of course, you know.
Well, you know, one of the main themes in horror is isolation. You know, you try to get your characters somewhere where there's
cabin
in the woods. If you think of Jaws, once the boat is kind of out in the middle of the water, the haunted house on the hill. And with a small town, as Tim just mentioned, you know, there's really nowhere to turn. And there are certainly exceptions. You know, there are great horror films that are shot, you know, in New York City. Rosemary's Baby comes to mind. But really, ultimately, the characters are often isolated in some way, and that's much easier to do in a small town.
And something you brought up, Tim Wagoner, the normalcy of a small town, or what we perceive as normalcy. The greater the normalcy, then the more contrast that you show with the horror.
Right. And you can do the normalcy kind of on the top layer, like David Lynch does in Blue Velvet.
Uh-huh.
He's even got this like metaphorical shot of the grass, and then we go down and see all these insects, you know, below it, you know, to kind of describe what's going on. But it works that way too.
Is it something that everybody can too relate to immediately? When I'm thinking about literature now, that you can read about it and it's easy to visualize.
You mean just the small town?
Yeah, kinda? Just the small town. They all seem to look alike.
Yeah, you can probably believe it more, and it can be made up more than a big city. You know, it's like in the comic books where you have Gotham City and Metropolis. Everybody knows those places aren't real, but they don't know that some little town in Ohio with some name that sounds like it's real.
Uh-huh.
You know, it allows them to suspend their disbelief a little bit more, I think.
You said you lived in a small town.
Yeah, I grew up in West Milton, Ohio, and now I live in Centerville, which isn't quite as small, but still, you know, all the little suburbs of Dayton kind of have that small town vibe.
What about you, Dave Phillippe?
I grew up in a town of 2,000 people in Minnesota, and I think there's definitely something to you know, people that grow up in that kind of environment. You know, not that every single person that's written a horror story or written a horror film grows up like that, but I just remember you had to invent things to make life more interesting, you know. And I just, at the end of our, where my parents built their house, was on the edge of town at the time, and there it was still kind of adjacent to farmland, and there was this barn that was kind of at the end of our street that was, you know, long abandoned, and we made up so many stories about seeing lights, you know, in the window and seeing faces in the window and things like that. So I think, you know, if you grew up in a small town, your imagination hopefully kicks in just to make things more interesting.
Yeah, and one of the things you said was that, you know, on the edge of town, mm-hmm. the small towns, there's the beyond.
That's true. Yeah,
you know, you don't quite get in the city. It's just another mm-hmm. block or another street. Could be dangerous, could That's be right. dark, but yep. it's not the unknown, which you get if you just go a little too far outside the town limits.
That's what right. could be more normal than a child's bedroom at night, and yet that's where the scariest things of all hide under the bed, right?
Right.
I used to entertain myself, I'll use entertain loosely here, for hours at night staring at the closet, you know, waiting to see a little flicker of light or a little movement, and the imagination is an amazing thing. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about horror today and how small town and normalcy and also nostalgia play such a big role in so many horror stories. We're inspired by the Netflix series Stranger Things, which takes place in Hawkins, Indiana, a fictional place, but something that we're all very, very familiar with. My guests, Dave Phillippe, he's director of film and video at the Wexner Center for the Arts at Ohio State, and also Tim Wagoner, he's a horror author and creative writing professor at Sinclair Community College in Dayton. What do you think of when you think of small town horror? What's your favorite movie? What about a book? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. When you're growing up in a small town and you grew up watching movies about horror in small towns, St. Philippi, I'm sure, did it resonate with you differently than you think maybe it did me growing up in Grand Rapids, Michigan?
Oh, totally. And Tim hit it right on the head. I mean, right behind our backyard was a field that, you know, one year might be corn, one year might be sunflowers. And our imaginations just ran wild with that. And so, you know, seeing a film, I think it was Village of the Damned, is that the black and white one with the key, you know, seeing that like late night and stuff, it totally made your, you know, imagination kind of run. And it's not necessarily a horror film, but I remember Planet of the Apes, the scene where the, you know, the apes kind of appear for the first time and all of the humans are running through the cornfield. I mean, that cornfield was like Planet of the Apes for me. And so, yeah, there were lots of extra resonances growing up in a small town. Just anything that kind of tapped into your experience, you know, it stuck with you.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, where I grew up, there's this, like an old cemetery not too far down the road.
Oh, gosh, the cemetery. I can't believe we haven't mentioned a cemetery.
Yep. And, you know, you could just go in there and walk around, and there would be graves so old that most of the stuff had worn off in that section of the cemetery. And there was like a giant, giant hole for this huge groundhog that used to just sit there and look at you when you ride your bike by. And so you'd see things like that. You'd see sort of strange things. And of course, you would probably see, like, you know, you're talking about like the barns or whatever might be kind of dilapidated. You see those kind of things too. Animals that you're not quite sure what they are because they're kind of darting around behind the grass or whatever, or just making a noise. So, yeah, I mean, it really does resonate with me because of where I grew up.
How many stories revolve around the scenario of a family moving out to the country to get away from the big city? I just watched the original Stepford Wives. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not rural, but it's still a small town where everything's supposed to be great and there's no crime and that kind of a thing. And but that getting away from it all thing out to some peaceful place.
Well, yeah, I mean, so many horror films are, I think Tim use this word, you know, you're a place where you feel safe is violated. And, you know, think of one of the, you know, kind of greatest violations in film history, the shower scene in Psycho, where, you know, where should you feel the safest, you know, in your locked house, in your locked bathroom, maybe not locked, but, in, you know, it's the greatest violation, you know. And, you know, anyone that grew up then, I didn't, but, you know, my mom tells me for years after that, she would think about it when she was taking a shower.
Sure.
You know, and I know that doesn't quite address the small town aspect, but I think you know, whether you've lived in a small town or not, you project that onto it. It should be a place where there's very little, you know, trouble, very little, you know, threat of danger. Like, everything is, you know, manageable. And, you know, growing up in a small town, you know, we only had, I think, two police officers. And one of them was, you know, in my memory, he was 90 years old. That can't be possible. But, you know, he would let us sit in his car. And, you know, if anything really, really bad happened, I'm not sure our town was equipped to deal with it.
Yeah. In small towns, you know, they allow for the isolation where the people might not have as much contact with other people outside. So when you come visit, that's when you find out that, oh, they have a lottery, you know, once a year. And that's not necessarily a good thing. And how come there are no adults in this town? And the kids are wandering through the corn. So, I mean, it allows you that possibility where if you just kind of like, you know, go to a different apartment in your building and they're doing something, you're like, how come the neighbors haven't noticed? Why hasn't somebody called the cops?
Right. What kind of stories do you write, and how does the setting involved in those?
Well, the kind I write are stories where the psychological kind of aspect of the characters are sort of mirrored in what happens in the outside world. And small towns, it's just where I grew up and I live, and so I just pull, you know, from my own experiences and things that I've seen. You know, if you went through one of my stories or books and you knew me, you'd be like, oh, all these things are real. It's just the monsters aren't.
Right.
So, you know, I think that if I had grown up in a city, I'd probably gravitate more toward that as a setting.
I don't know. I think that Stephen King grew up in a rural area, too. He must mm-hmm. have. I mean, because he writes so, that's so such a big part of his stories and that kind of a thing. But he taps into that, and he also taps into nostalgia a lot, and, of course, a lot of music. What about that nostalgia piece of all of this? We all kind of, once again, all harken back to the olden days in the small towns when the United States was mostly rural. Now it's mostly urban. Most Americans live in urban places. How does nostalgia play a role, Dave Phillippe?
Well, I'm not sure that does in all of the horror stories set in a small town, but you know, since the show Stranger Things kind of inspired the topic today, mm-hmm. you know, that's certainly a big part of it, and it's more specific. It's nostalgia for the 80s, and it's funny. I've, you know, just tried to catch up on some of the episodes in it, and that's the part that's not really working for me. Having uh-huh. lived through the 80s, I'm not nostalgic for the 80s
yeah.
whatsoever. When I see some of the clothes and the hairstyles and things like that, it's more whatever the opposite of nostalgia is. But yeah, I think, you know, whether you grew up in a small town or, again, like where you didn't, I think there is this nostalgia projected onto small town life. And Tim referenced Blue Velvet earlier, where
right.
David Lynch is kind of, you know, peeling back that layer that people presume, you know, what a small town is like. And I think anyone that has grown up in a small town, you know, it's not always this, you know, idyllic place to live. You know, things like that do go on, you know, people cheat on their spouses or, you know, whatever the thing is. And, you know, bad things do happen in small towns.
We are going to take a quick break. We're talking about horror in film, in literature, on television, inspired by the recent release of the third season of Stranger Things on Netflix. It takes place in the fictional Indiana town of Hawkins. If you have a question or a comment, if you have an idea of what you think illustrates this concept of using the small town backdrop in horror, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting at the Ohio State Fair today For more information about how to join us out here, go to WOSU.org. It's actually the WOSU Kids Day at the Ohio State Fair, and that's why we're talking about horror today, because we want to scare all those little kids out there. But if you don't want to listen to that, you can check out the PBS Kids costume characters here. There's Clifford the Dog, Daniel Tiger, Nature Cat, and more. There's a fairground scavenger hunt to win a back-to-school kit and other WOSU giveaways. And there's also a Meet Munch the Fox at WOSU Kids Day. You can have lunch with Munch the Fox. So the Columbus Rec and Parks will be serving a free lunch until 1:30 p.m. today. So check that out, too. And if you have any questions, go to WOSU.org. We're talking about horror stories, as I said, and why they often are set in small towns and pegged often to ideas of nostalgia. Still with us is Director of Film and Video at the Wexner Center for the Arts at Ohio State, Dave Philippi. Joining us, Joe Neff. He's director of the annual 24-hour horror movie marathon, Shock Around the Clock, at the Drexel Theater in Bexley on October 12th and 13th. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/All Sides. Welcome, Joe Neff.
Thank you, Ann. Thanks for having me on. It's such a gorgeous day to talk about such horrible things.
It's horrible things, but it's often a sunny day in the neighborhood when something horrible is happening. That's the amazing thing about it. There's a scene in Stranger Things I was talking about with one of my interns yesterday where they're watching the fireworks on the 4th of July, and she says, "Mommy, the trees are moving." And she goes, "Oh, no, honey, it's just the fireworks." And, "No, it's actually a monster moving through the trees." What about that small town setting? I mean, do you see that when you're doing Shock Around the Clock? Is it obvious when you're doing something like that or not so much?
I don't know how much of we look at that in terms of programming the lineup, but like in prep for the show today, looking around for films that deal with horror in small town America, it is pretty amazing what a recurring theme that is. You're talking about things in broad daylight, and like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a film where half of it takes place in broad daylight, and some of the most frightening things are the anticipation of people walking towards the house in broad daylight, not knowing what's going to be in there, you know, and that can be more frightening than what you can't see sometimes.
Right, right. And then you were talking about the sense of claustrophobia, I think earlier, Dave Philippi, and a lot of times, you know, chainsaw massacres occur in basements or, you know, dark dungeons somewhere, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I use the word isolation, and you know, when you feel cut off from safety, however, you know, that just adds to the horror. You know, it's a sense of hopelessness. It ramps up the fear, both in the characters and the audience. You know, that's what horror really, you know, there's so many films that rely on shock and surprise. And that's, you know, fine. But like actual horror, where you're kind of, you know, building the suspense, you're identifying with the characters, things like that. I think that's an extra level of filmmaking that needs to take place. And one of my favorite horror films is a film called The Thing from Another World. I know there have been remakes, but this is the 1950s version, directed by Christian Nyby. And, you know, these scientists basically are isolated in this this station in the Arctic. And this monster from another world thaws out and comes to life. And they're all trapped. You know, the weather prevents anyone from kind of coming in or getting out. And they're trapped. And the way that they build suspense by characters opening doors in this small, confined space. But, you know, they open a door three times in a row and nothing bad happens. But then the fourth one, there's the monster, you know. And, you know, you feel so isolated. And you know, use the word claustrophobic. I do think that that's one of the main tools that horror writers and, well, mainly filmmakers can use.
Right. Even the Chainsaw Massacre, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, when you're walking in that, as soon as you go in the house, you know you're goner because there's nobody out there.
Yeah.
You're isolated.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, no one's going to hear your screams.
Yeah, and it's so interesting that those films stay relevant to modern society because we're so connected. And technology is so ubiquitous that I think a lot of people look back at films like that or other films that are made today, and the further you get out from society, the more disconnected you are, literally.
Still.
And as you become more dependent on that technology, when you don't have it, that really opens you up, and then you have to deal with all these primal fears and all these terrible things that could be out there.
Let's see. Is it Cheryl in Lancaster?
Yes.
Hi. Thanks for listening.
Hi.
You're on the air. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on. And I'm in here from Sedona, Arizona, and I listen to your program all the way out in Sedona, Arizona.
Oh, thanks. That's kind of the small town, too.
Yes, it is. It's beautiful.
Sure
there is.
Is
a there is a series of books that I'd like to recommend written by Louise Kenney, and they are stories based on a small town, not in America, but in Canada. The name of the village is Three Pines, and it's presented in terms of being a mystery series, but throughout that mystery series, there are also elements of otherworldly influences and being alone in a basement and sinister characters that possibly might be monsters. It's an excellent read, and she's been celebrated all over the country and actually internationally as one of the better, I won't call her a horror writer, but she's an excellent writer of otherworldly things.
Louise Penny, and the series
Louise
is
Penny.
Three Pines. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Cheryl, for calling, and thanks for listening all the way from Sedona, Arizona, too.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. That made me think of something, the idea, you know, of being out. It reminded me when Cheryl was talking about that, of also how extraterrestrial or otherworldly things often land in rural areas.
Of course.
Where no one has a witness. You're all alone. You saw it. You saw the alien, and there's nothing you can do because no one will ever believe you. Is that... Am I right?
Of course. Well, and that's what makes... I think part of that, too, and when you get into a narrative level, that what you just talked about, it really appeals to a sense of mystery. And that's what people enjoy, is the fact. I mean, that's, again, one of the primal paranoid fears. I saw something, but no one else did.
Right.
And no one will believe me, you know? And it's that's one of the worst
and
things in the world.
And then everyone thinks I'm crazy, and now they're going to put me
crazy.
In a straitjacket.
Yeah.
I really can't do anything
Next
about it.
Next stop, the hospital, yeah.
I think, you know, a little bit along those lines, you know, with a small town, it can work both ways. You can have, you know, the stranger, whether it's an alien or a monster or just a stranger coming to town. And, you know, in a small town, you know everybody. Now, all of a sudden, there's this new thing. But it can also work the other way. There are so many horror films where the outsider comes to the small town and immediately everything seems normal. And then just the longer the person spends there, you know, Tim mentioned The Lottery, a classic horror film, The Wicker Man, where, you know, someone shows up on one of the British Isles and, you know, not to give away the ending, but becomes part of a ceremony there, a very horrific one. And so I think that's another thing about the small town. It is a bit of a blank canvas where it's easier to fill in the details than a city where there's more people, there's more things going on, and it's kind of harder to account for everything in terms of storytelling.
In Stranger Things, you know, you have the kids who know the police chief, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. he's intimately involved in the storyline as well. There are these sort of, I guess, you know, Sherwood Anderson might have called them grotesques, or these caricatures of people. What about caricatures of small towns?
Yeah.
What do they look
that's,
like?
That's a very American thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's the us versus them. How many stories do you see where it's the city folk going to the small town and everything seems very strange? I mentioned it's not considered a traditional horror film, but Deliverance.
Yeah.
Is something that's like that is such an
getting
archetypical story. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. I remember when I was 11, I went on a Boy Scout camping trip on a canoe trip, and somehow we got separated from the rest of the pack, and our canoe tipped over, and I had to go up a river to try to look for the rest of the folks, and I had to climb up on the side of the bank, and I'm looking at this farm, and the first thing I think in my mind is like, oh no, it's like Deliverance, you know, and that's how powerful that is because there's this long tradition in American narrative of what goes on in the country is being, you know, backwoods or inbred or you know, just some the evil that you don't get to see as part of quote unquote refined society. And it's pretty powerful still, you know.
I think Deliverance isn't otherworldly, but it's horror.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking of along those lines, when you were talking, Dave Phillippe, about the outsider coming in and changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about, I think it's the very first episode of The Twilight Zone. I can't remember the name of it, though, where they start flickering the lights in a little neighborhood, a very insulated, it's a neighborhood in a city, but they start messing with the lights in the and
the monsters are due on Maple Street.
The monsters are due on Maple Street.
The classic paranoia tale.
Oh, my gosh, and how it changes people, and the monsters are the people who live on Maple Street.
Yeah.
Because they change into that.
Yeah, it's that there's such a rich thread of that throughout, especially through film, of what would it take to tip people over, especially people in this small bucolic town that seemingly has everything going for it.
Well, I mean, the lottery is a great example, of course. Yeah. You know, is a classic. An event and a moment in time can do to a group of people.
Yeah. Or that sense of tradition, like Dave was talking about with. Yeah. Which one were you talking about? The Wicker Man.
Yeah. Right,
even though it's in England. It's that sense that in small towns they have codes that they live by, and that is immutable. In the book of It, Stephen King has such a brilliant metaphor of that small town of Derry, not only being about 50s conformity, but also being about this code that they have lived by. And he talks about how when some of the parents do certain things, it's almost like they fall into a trance, because that's what they know. And generation upon generation upon generation, they've just done this. And it's that evil that can come from that that's kind of fascinating.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about horror, some of the tropes of horror, one of which is small town America. It's very familiar to a lot of people, because if you like horror, that's where it usually is taking place. Also, people who are getting away from it all think they're getting away from something bad about the big city and walk right into a hornet's nest in the small town. My guest, Dave Phillippe, is director of film and video at the Wexner Center for the Arts. Also with us, Joe Neff. He's director of the annual 24-hour horror movie marathon, Shock Around the Clock, at the Drexel Theater in Bexley. It's October 12th and 13th this year. For more information, check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. We are broadcasting at the Ohio State Fair today. It's a perfect day at the fair. You can't miss it. WSU Kids Day is today. We're broadcasting live until 3 p.m. We have PBS Kids costume characters, Clifford the Dog, Daniel Tiger, Nature Cat, and more. We also have a fairgrounds scavenger hunt. You can win a back-to-school kit and other WOSU giveaways. Check it out. Bring the kids down. Don't waste a minute, because it is a perfect day out here today. If you have a question or comment, we'd like to hear from listeners about what your idea of the perfect horror story is and how it fits into this idea of that small town nostalgia, isolation theme. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There's another really classic strategy, I think, in horror, and that's the person who got away and who goes back. You know, a writer who's going back to see their childhood friends to figure out what was that scary thing that scared us when we were kids. I guess It is a classic. Lean on Me, I think, is another Stephen King.
Stand by Me, right?
Stand by Me. Mm-hmm. Not exactly what I think of as horror, but it's the same kind of horrific feelings, and someone going back and revisiting that in a book they're writing. But why is that such a thing, Dave Phillippe?
Well, kind of like you were saying, it probably in a deeper way taps into nostalgia, you know, going back to where you grew up, and, you know, now as a grown up, kind of realizing that You're seeing it with a different set of eyes, with different experiences, and things weren't.
And you think you're going to be able to manage things better.
Well, there's that aspect of it too, sure.
Yeah,
it's that universal adult theme of, I can go back and conquer my youth, or I can do it one more time in a way. That's like half the Stephen King universe. the writer who goes back to the small town and finds that things are still rotten.
Let's see, Betsy. Oops. I lost Betsy. Sorry. Betsy, try calling back, and we'll take your call. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The Sunny Day issue we talked about, you mentioned the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that people are walking into this horror house of horrors in the broad daylight, and a lot of times we associate horror with darkness.
Well, one film that brought to mind, it's actually based on a true story, the film Zodiac, David Fincher's Zodiac, and, you know, about the Zodiac killer in the Bay Area. And one of the worst, or one of the most horrific murders, this couple, they're just out in a beautiful sunny day, kind of picnicking out in the grass. And all of a sudden, the Zodiac killer shows up, and there's, you know, no protection, nowhere to turn. It's this otherwise, you know, idyllic day, and this flash of, you know, horror happens to them. And again, it's based on, you know, it's a true story, but the Fincher used very classic horror elements to, you know, to make that murder even, you know, more heightened, more emotionally heightened, I should say.
Betsy in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Betsy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just wanted to touch back earlier. You talked about isolation, and I wanted to mention how that can very well lead to madness, and I hadn't heard mention yet of The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
One
oh,
of my geez. Favorite Morris. Movies of all time. So I will go off the air. Right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Betsy. Yeah, The Shining, once again.
Classic writer's tale.
Exactly.
Stuck in the winter for 6 months so I can do my project. Yeah.
Gibberish.
Yeah.
Another film like that is Roman Polanski's Repulsion, where, you know, Catherine Deneuve is, you know, kind of isolated in this apartment to the point that, you know, there's many other things or the audience needs to kind of read into it, but she's isolated and, you know, she essentially kind of descends into madness. And, you know, you're left to, there are clues of what drove her in that direction, but that's certainly a part of it.
And let's see, Troy in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Troy.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good, good. I just wanted to bring up Frank Darabont's The Mist, his adaptation of the Stephen King novella. And you guys were talking about how people get into confines and how to get into that grocery store and kind of break up into two factions and how humanity devolves from there. So that's what I was thinking about when you guys were talking about small towns and whatnot, how the people responded in The Mist.
The confinement of The Mist divides them.
And it boils everybody down to what is almost their own stereotypical behavior or where they fit in the structure of the town. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a great example.
Let's see. John in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hey, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I just wanted to mention a movie that's in the theaters right now, which I'm sure your guests have seen, Midsommar. You're talking about the Wicker Man and being scared to death during the daylight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very... Yeah, that one hurts. I've got kids, so I haven't been to see a scary movie in a theater for a while.
Well, give us a little idea about the plot, John. I haven't
What's
seen
that?
It. Give me a little idea about the plot.
Just a retreat, a cultist retreat out in the beautiful, idyllic hills of Europe, and good, you know, what looks really good goes very bad pretty quickly, actually. And, yeah, I don't want to give it away, but it's definitely do yourself a favor. I mean, last scary movie I saw in the theater was The Grudge, so it was really nice to come back.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I think the director of...
Okay, thank you, John.
The director of Midsommar was, I think, invited to make something along the lines of Wicker Man.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it takes place in Sweden.
I think it's Sweden, yeah. Well, it's interesting because it has a lot of the Wicker Man in it, but it also deals, like his previous film Hereditary did, with familial trauma and trying to recover from that. And it's in some ways even worse because it's this person going off to think that they can get some kind of semblance of self and recover, and what they find is something much, much different. But it also plays off that sense of this very small, tightly knit community that's been around for forever, and they have this very specific code about how they live, and of course it turns out to be
something bad,
nefarious in some ways, or good depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, it depends on what you're into. That's Joe Neff. He's director of the annual 24-hour horror movie marathon Shock Around the Clock. It's at Drexel Theater in Bexley in October. You can check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides to get more information about that. Also with us, Dave Phillippe, director of film and video at OSU's Wexner Center for the Arts. We're talking about horror and what makes good horror, and why so often small towns and isolation are involved. If you have an idea of a story or a film or a television series, we were inspired to do this by the hit Netflix series Stranger Things, which is just released its third season a few weeks ago. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair. I'll tell you more about what's going on when we get back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're broadcasting live from the Ohio State Fair today. It's a beautiful day at the fair. It's WOSU Kids Day. We have live radio broadcasts until 3 p.m. PBS Kids costume characters, Clifford the Dog, Daniel Tiger, Nature Cat, and someone else I don't quite recognize, but they're out there. There's a lot of people. There's some lines, but not bad. And there's also a really cool mural that you can paint on, a monster mural. There's a whole bunch of cool stuff out here. So you can play the scavenger hunt with your kids, win a back-to-school kit doing that, and there's other WOSU giveaways. So come out and join WOSU out here at the Ohio State Fair. It's a beautiful day. We're talking about horror stories set in small-town America and what makes these settings so frightening. Still with us is Director of Film and Video at the Wexner Center for the Arts at Ohio State, Dave Phillippe. And also with us, Joe Neff, Director of the annual 24-hour horror movie marathon, Chalk Around the Clock, at the Drexel Theater in Bexley in October. But Joe Neff, there is also a mini.
Yes, like a kickoff event.
Kickoff in August. Yeah, what's going on?
For the past 5 years, we've led up to the October Horror Marathon with an all-night Dusk to Dawn show in August at the Drexel. And this year's is on August 10th, 10 p.m. start time. And it's a five-film tribute to David Cronenberg, one of our favorite directors, with his first three films, Shivers, Rabid, and The Brood with Oliver Reed, and then Videodrome with Debbie Harry and James Woods, and The Dead Zone with Christopher Walken. So we show those films, and then we have a bunch of 35mm trailers and shorts, and part of the big hook is we have the exclusive announcement of the film lineup for the October Full Strength Marathon that night. We show a trailer reel with all the films on it. So
It's 24-hour horror marathon. How do you curate something like that? How do you even begin?
Oh, boy, it's tough. I always tell people that the formula we've used for going on 30 years now is it's a little something for everybody.
Okay.
We always try to get a couple local premieres, some classics, some rediscoveries, some oddball things, some films. Sometimes there are films that only received limited theatrical play, say, in the last couple years, and we bring them back, and it's the first time that our audience has seen them. We had a great film last year. There's an 80s slasher film called Scream for Help that, again, is a small-town America film that almost no one has heard of, but it's about this girl who thinks that her stepfather wants to murder her mother. And it's almost like Nancy Drew goes to hell, where she is so convinced that her stepfather's crooked, and she tries to investigate him. And it's just a wild film that Michael Winner, who directed a lot of really famous films, like the first Death Wish film, he directed. And we unleashed that on the crowd, and it was a phenomenal experience because it's something they hadn't seen.
There is a classic movie, and I bet you, Dave Phillippe, you'll know it. A little girl in a family, her uncle comes to visit them, stays with them for a long time, and she starts to figure out and think that there's something wrong with this guy.
Shadow of a Doubt.
Shadow of a Doubt. Classic. Yeah. And they've remade it, I think. But it was from the 50s, yeah. I think.
It was 40s.
The 40s, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's another small town.
Another
film.
Small town. Yeah. Another small town.
Charismatic uncle. What could be wrong?
Let's see. Madison in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Madison. Hello,
Hi,
Madison.
How are you?
Good, thanks. Hi. You're on the air. Hello.
Good. How are you?
Good.
Okay, so I have a movie that I wanted to bring to your attention. Dave, I'm not sure if you've seen it before. It's called Troll Hunter. It's a Norwegian film.
Uh-huh. Well, okay, so I have seen it. It was really scary. And it's out in the middle of nowhere.
Yes, it is out in the middle of nowhere in the beautiful wilderness in Scandinavia. And the thing that I love about that movie so much is that it's kind of a horror movie for people who aren't super used to horror, in my opinion, because it's super whimsical. It's not like all scary. It's filmed in kind of a documentary style, and it really makes you kind of believe in that moment, like, wow, like, trolls are real, this is an actual problem, like, you know, it's just, it's such a great story, it's so compelling, it's not super long, and it's just a great movie. I highly recommend it to anybody who loves horror, and anybody who really just likes any sort of fantasy and whimsy in their movies.
Yeah, it's there's sort of a mythical element to it, too. Thank you, Madison. Does that ring any bells for you guys? I've heard of I've seen it.
We showed that at a science fiction marathon some years ago, and yeah, it's she nails it. Couldn't have said it any better myself.
Yeah, way out in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
Way out in the middle. Now, Dave Phillippe, you've got a horror thing coming up in August?
Well, we have a couple films that would fit. We've been doing a series of B-movies this month and next. And next Thursday, August 1st, we're showing the pre-code horror film The Vampire Bat, about a small village in Europe where people start to show up with their blood sucked from them. And the town, you know, is obviously terrified and needs to figure out what happened. And it stars Faye Ray and Melvin Douglas.
Okay.
And then on August 20th, it's our last WEX drive-in of the summer, our series of outdoor films. And we're showing the 1996 film The Craft, about a, I guess, kind of a coven of teenage witches. And it's become a really big cult film among a certain age group. And so we're hoping that that's really – the students will be back by then. And so we're hoping it's a really popular night.
The Craft.
Yeah.
614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call and share your idea of a good horror flick and that plays into the theme of the small town and safety and isolation at once. Grant in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Grant.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So there's this show series I watched recently called Gravity Falls. It's more of an animated cartoon for kids, but it has a very good plot that focuses a lot on mystery and conspiracy, and it takes place in a small town called Gravity Falls in the state of Oregon. So very out there, isolated from the rest of society. There's this researcher who found out there are just a lot of weird things happening in a small little town. And so he decides to go there and start researching all of these things, and he keeps these three journals. And one day the author disappears, but his three journals are left behind. And so you follow the story of these two kids who find these journals and are out exploring the town, trying to figure out the fate of the author and where all of these mysterious things are coming from. So you kind of think about Sasquatch, some similar stories, you know, just weird paranormal things that happen in the United States and other countries. It's kind of a culmination of all of those things.
Okay. Gravity Falls. It's a, I think my son has told me about that. Does horror translate to animation very well? What do you guys think?
It can. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not something traditionally associated with that. I defer to Dave on this because he's by far the animation expert between the two of us.
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to think. I of course, there must be a million examples I'm not thinking of.
There's an interesting film that was revived a few years ago called Belladonna of Sadness, not a traditional horror film, but very much deals with horrific imagery and mythology. And it's very dark. It's also very beautiful.
Another one that comes to mind is there's a short from the 50s. UPA, which was this great animation studio, United Productions of America, did a adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe's Telltale Heart. And people aren't going to be terrified by it, but it is a horror adaptation, and it's very effective in its imagery. And that could be a whole other show. But I wonder with animation if it's harder to identify with the characters in a way that's typically necessary for really effective horror. I'm sure someone could prove me wrong.
And the first thing I think of when I think of horror and animation is the Disney shorts that would be centered around Halloween, or the Warner Brothers cartoons that had like the Gossamer or the horror type things.
Yeah. But they're funny. They're kind of like spoofs of horror films, not necessarily horror films. Yeah.
The first horror films I ever saw that I was allowed to, and we'd have to stay up late, were those Vincent Price, Edgar Allan Poe flicks were obviously, once I read Edgar Allan Poe, knew that they were bastardizations of the stories, but scary. Pit and the Pendulum.
And wonderful balancing acts between camp and seriousness and beautiful films to look at. And Vincent Price is an icon for that reason, that he can play a role like that straight while also winking just a bit at the audience.
I'm thinking of some cartoons now. There's certainly horror elements in many of the Disney features. Pinocchio, where they end up on Pleasure Island, and the boys are turning into donkeys.
Yes.
I mean, that's tapping into some real kind of classic horror themes. Obviously, in Snow White, The Witch, there's definitely horror elements, scattered throughout the Disney canon.
And the conclusion of Fantasia with Night on Bald Mountain.
Words right out of my mouth. Yeah,
is wonderful. Yeah,
right.
And as a kid, I even used to find the Sorcerer's Apprentice sequence a little bit frightening.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, Lane in Grandview, you're on the air. Hi, Lane.
Hey, how are
Lane, you? Hey, Lane, you got to turn down your radio.
I'm sorry. Wait a minute. It's not my radio. I've got you on speaker.
Gotcha.
Is that going to matter? Okay. I was thinking of the remake of War of the Worlds. We were talking about small communities, and even though War of the Worlds is set in a large urban area, it's still all about neighborhoods and, you know, little boroughs and things like that. And I found that movie terrifying just because of the isolation that these people felt. You know, all of a sudden these giant machines come out of the ground and start destroying their neighborhood. And there's no direction. There's nothing you can do to stop it. There's no, you know, the army's not there. The police aren't there. There's nothing. And I found that particularly terrifying. With that, I'll hang up.
Yeah. Chaos.
Yeah, I think that's a great, and I actually was thinking about that a couple days ago. It's one of those great sci-fi horror hybrids, and there is a scene in that film, I think the most horrific scene, where they do end up in the countryside, and the spaceships are kind of sucking people up into them and turning on the blender. But you know, there's a scene in the house where mm-hmm. they're in the basement.
With that snake-like thing
exactly.
is following them.
No, there's wonderful horror elements in that film.
Well, and there's that sense in War of the Worlds and that traditional story that they were here. They were always here.
Yes.
They were just waiting, you know, which what a
well,
classic.
It's Independence Day.
Yeah,
as well,
out in
right.
the country. Yeah, yeah. They've just been waiting for us.
When you know, I wanted to get back just real quick, Joan F., to how you're picking him. You say a little bit for everyone. What does that even mean? How do you
break
down?
It's getting harder and harder to define because, you know, the way culture's gone, I mean, first of all, everything is so much more segmented and niche in culture. Plus, we've been doing these events for 30-plus years, so in the beginning, we could just show a bunch of classic films and that was fine. Well, now you have 30 more years of reference points for people, and you have some of the old-timers who are still coming to the events who will say, oh, you showed that film 20 years ago. And then we'll say, yeah, but half the audience has never seen this in a theater.
They weren't
so
born
it's,
yet.
it is like every year becomes even more of a balancing act. And it's hard. A lot of times it comes down to availability or cost mm-hmm. or I mean, Dave knows all about this. Mm-hmm. It's trying to like put together this intricate puzzle every time you put it together and hoping that it reaches out to enough people. But I tell you, one of the things I love about the events, I mean, it's great watching movies, but our audience is so diverse and they come from so many backgrounds and so many places. And I give the spiel at the beginning of each event saying, you know, we're all separate in a lot of ways. We might not see each other, but for one day we get back together for this twisted family reunion and we get to spend 24 hours together and united by something we all love, which is science fiction or horror movies.
Well, thank you for uniting us today on the score. That's Joe Neff. He's director of the annual 24-hour horror movie marathon, Shock Around the Clock. It's in October. There's a preview in August where they'll announce the lineup for this year's Shock Around the Clock. Go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides, and you can learn more about that, where to go and what to do. And also with us, Dave Filippi, Director of Film and Video at the Wexner Center for the Arts. Dave, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Joe Neff, thank you.
As well, thank you.
And I want to say thanks to the AllSides staff, producer Mary Lee Williams, assistant producer Kyle McKinnon, our interns, Bridget Sarpong, Deborah Eschen, Katie Hamilton, and Joe Motz, who produced this show, also with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue, usually, not today, because we're at the fair today. Alan DeCenzo is a composer of our theme music, WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrola, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Kevin and Eric, couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much for being here for us. Thanks, everybody else, for listening. Don't forget to check out the fair today. WOSU is here broadcasting live until 3 p.m. You can also check out WOSU Kids Day events all day. So go to WOSU.org/allsides and learn more about that. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.